Josiah.
Okay, Josiah, an evil king.
He was a great one.
Yeah, he was a good king, wasn't he? Righteous king, and as much as he worked with Zephaniah, well, come on in, guys. How you doing tonight? As bad as you know, as much as Josiah was a faithful king, and as much as Zephaniah worked with him, God still had plans to destroy Judah. So they had an uphill battle to fight together, and it was a losing battle, of course. Who did he foretell? Zephaniah. Who did he foretell the destruction of? Anybody? I'm sorry?
I said Jerusalem, but every time I open my mouth, it's wrong.
Okay. In 625 BC, he prophesied about the destruction of Assyria. And Nineveh, right?
I don't.
And you can use the terms interchangeable, Nineveh and Assyria. Basically the same thing. What happened to Nineveh? 625 BC.
It was destroyed, wasn't it?
Well, they were completely destroyed. And I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago or so, that it was so completely destroyed, God said, or the prophet Zephaniah said, that it would be so completely destroyed that the animals, the birds, so forth, would roam around there. It would just completely like Sodom and Gomorrah. And you know, it wasn't very many years ago in this century that they actually found Nineveh. And they found that it was right across the river from a town in Iraq called Mosul. And of course, we know that from the latest wars over there with what's going on. And but they just actually determined that that was the city of Nineveh by some of the discoveries that they found in the way of cuneiforms and this type of thing. So that was really kind of interesting to me, that it was so far gone that it was 2,500 years later they finally discovered that Nineveh was not a city of fiction, but was actually historic fiction. Why did Zephaniah and what family of people? Israel? Is that who he was prophesying about, Israel or Judah? Yeah, Israel's long gone, aren't they? So this is Judah that Zephaniah is talking about and denouncing. Why is he denouncing them?
They not only went the way of Israel, they went farther in their evil.
Well, the only reason why Judah survived a few more years than Israel was because they had a few good kings. But eventually that went by the wayside as well, Josiah being the last good king, and so Judah came to an end too. But they, Zephaniah also foretold the destruction of Judea and the surrounding countries, not only Judea, but all the surrounding countries as well. By who?
By Babylon?
I'm sorry?
Babylon?
Yeah, by the Chaldeans, which is Babylon. Okay? And so that's coming down. It's going to happen. And God has made his promise. So now, Zephaniah is going to by the wayside, and now we're coming up on Haggai, which is number 10 out of the 12 minor prophets. What's kind of interesting to me is these 12 minor prophets actually at one time were considered one book. And now it's been broken up now, and where it's, where we see it today is, there's 12 of us. But if you'll remember, who was the first minor prophet, by the way? Anybody remember where we started at? Hosea? Yeah, started in Hosea, didn't it? Okay, and where does it end?
Malachi.
Malachi, which is how many books from now?
Three.
Okay, got all this down pat. Okay. Haggai is really probably the smallest of the books. Has how many chapters? Two chapters. Okay, chapter one, chapter two. Chapter two is a little bit longer than chapter one, but two chapters. Okay, that's some of the most important, because even though it is just two lousy chapters, lousy probably not a good word, but it has some of the most important parts of the Old Testament story. And for centuries, Hebrew prophets have been accusing Israel of breaking their covenant with God through their injustices and their idolatry. And this has already come to fruition with the country of Israel, but we're now winding down the country of Judah. And the prophets warned that God would send enemies to attack them, attack their countries, their cities, and even Jerusalem itself. And we're going to see that that's going to happen. One such attack was by the great country of Babylon. They destroyed not only Jerusalem completely, but they destroyed the temple, and they hauled all the people off, didn't they? Took them into exile. And of course, who do we remember about Babylon? Who do we connect that to? Nebuchadnezzar?
Yeah.
Daniel? Yeah, Jeremiah, Hosea. These were all people that were first hauled off in the first exile with Babylon. But he left, the king, Nebuchadnezzar, left rulers, kind of puppet kings in Judea. And they just continued. They pulled some sneaky stunts and got a hold of Egypt and tried to make a pact with them to, one of them broke off, and I don't remember which one, Jehoiachin, I think, broke off his relations with Nebuchadnezzar, and so he was taken off. Jehoiakim came around, and he was pulling some stunts with Egypt, I think. And but anyway, one of them went to Egypt and died. I can't remember which one it was now, Jehoiachin or Jehoiakim. There was another one in there. I forgot his name. It wasn't Hezekiah. It was
Zerubbabel?
No, this is while Babylon was this is 70 years before Zerubbabel. It's a Babylon captivity. Okay, so this happened in 587 BC, and we find this in 2 Kings chapter 24 and 25. After Josiah's reign, the last and good king in Judah. And in that particular time, Judah ceased to exist. Okay? Babylon got carried everybody off. And Nebuchadnezzar had enough, and so he went in and he completely destroyed Judah, city of Jerusalem, all the surrounding cities as well, and the temple. Completely destroyed it. Took everything. And so now we find the book of Haggai. which is how many years later?
70.
About 70 years. Babylon is gone. If you remember, it lasted 70 years after Babylon came up. They destroyed Assyria and Nineveh, became the world power. They lasted 70 years, and this was predicted, wasn't it? God told them it was going to last about 70 years. So now we come to the book of Haggai. Jerusalem is no more. And who was Haggai?
Prophet.
Okay, he was a prophet in Judea. He lived in, well, actually he lived in Babylon. But he was some of the people that came back with Zerubbabel. Who gave Zerubbabel and Joshua, the high priest, and some of the people permission to go back into Judea? Babylon now is destroyed.
Cyrus. Persia. Or God, Maya.
Okay.
King Cyrus.
Chaldeans, yeah. Is that right?
No.
Chaldeans. Who is it?
King Cyrus.
Yeah, these are the Persians, aren't they? Which is modern day Iran.
I know, that's alright.
Modern day Iran. This is the Persians. And they have come through and now they are the world power. And they have destroyed Babylon and its capital. And so now we're dealing with some kings that were kind of favorably favored the Israelites to some degree, and they have allowed some people to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the city and rebuild the temple there. Who was this? This was Darius, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now we see that these people, and think that Haggai was probably one of those people that returned from exile when Zerubbabel and his people came into Jerusalem. This is about 70 years. Okay. Later. Yeah, I just roughly went through. I haven't had any internet service at my house for a couple of weeks now. So somebody, when we were packing, went through and disconnected all of the cords from the internet box and from the TVs. The person's name shall not be named.
Oh, oops.
Yeah, my wife's still smarting over that. But anyway, I disconnected all the cables and stuff, and I did get a hold of Comcast, and they will be installing our equipment tomorrow, between 11 and 1. So we will hopefully have internet. So all this is handwritten. I'm sorry. I have a hard time following my notes here. Usually I have an opportunity to get on the computer and at least type it up in size 22 where I could read it. But anyway, so my handwriting since used to be beautiful. I used to have really great hand, but now it's just hand scratching. So, okay. Who was Zerubbabel?
He was his governor.
Yeah, he was the governor that the people chose.
But he was in the line of David.
He was in the line of David. That is exactly true. He was, I can't remember. I think it was Josiah that was a great-great-grandson of Hezekiah. Zephaniah, I believe. Not Josiah. Zephaniah. That we studied with the last week. He was a great-great-grandson of Hezekiah. But Zerubbabel is also in the lineage of David as well. But he now is the governor of what is termed Judea or Jerusalem. And who's the high priest?
Jehoshadak. No, Joshua.
Joshua. Joshua.
He's the son of
Joshua. He's the high priest now, isn't he? And they began to rebuild the city. And rebuild their lives as well, since they came back from exile and now they are in their country. Who did they run into that were citizens of that area? And they run into the Samaritans, and they had trouble with the Samaritans. But anyway, they spent time rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem and building their homes. And they kind of set aside God a little bit and didn't think about even rebuilding the temple, did they? They were rebuilding their fancy homes, and boy, did Haggai get in touch with them over that. Raked them over the coals. So, you know, we find this in, if we want to study a little bit more, in Ezra 1 through 6, and that talks about the big beginning of rebuilding the city of Jerusalem and rebuilding their homes. So you can imagine the people are really high. They're happy as a lark, aren't they? They've gone there, their hope for the future is great, and they're just tickled pink, but not from Haggai's point of view. He's upset, isn't he? Haggai, we know, is only two chapters, but really comes in four different parts. Chapter 1, verse 1 through 15, Haggai is motivating the returning exiles to rebuild the temple. And these four sections that we're going to visit a little bit tonight takes place over a very short period of time, 4 months. So this section 1 in Haggai chapter 1 through 15, he opens this chapter 1 by accusing the people of misplacing their priorities. Sure, they've returned to Jerusalem, haven't they? But they're spending all their time and their resources rebuilding their fancy houses while the temple is still in ruins. And it's been in ruins for how many years? 70 years it's been desolate. 70 years. So in Haggai 1:4, he asked them, are your own homes really more important than your allegiance to God? So he puts them on the spot, doesn't he? And this was kind of a neglect, remembrance of the rebellion of their ancestors in the past. He says this is why the land isn't producing, and there's famine. The land is dry. There's no food being grown, no rain. So you don't have any wine to drink, you don't have any oil, you don't have any grain, because your heart's not in it. Your heart is not right. So they're doing the same thing that their forefathers did. Haggai relates the list of covenant curses. And he refers to the curses, if you remember, back in Deuteronomy, when Moses was talking about the blessings that they would inherit if they were faithful and obeyed God and kept God's covenant. All the wonderful blessings that they could have, and how fruitful they would be because of God's blessing. But secondly, Moses lists, if you're not faithful, and this is what's going to happen to you. And he lists the curses. After he lists the blessings, he lists the curses if they're not paid. Well, what happened? They just kept getting worse and worse and worse, didn't they? And they didn't keep God's blessing. And so all the curses that were listed in Deuteronomy, Haggai is referring to here. All these curses are going to have already come and destroyed most of them. Now here's this remnant back. And he's reminding them of the problems that his forefathers have, and to avoid this disaster. So did the people listen to Haggai?
Yes. Eventually,
yeah.
They sort of did.
Yeah, they decided, hey, this guy's not so dumb after all. We better listen up. We better be motivated here to do God's will. Yeah, yeah.
Well, he didn't really do it. It says, Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel and Joshua and the spirit of the people. He's the one that got them moving. But it wasn't Haggai. Haggai spoke, but they didn't really listen to him.
Oh, yeah. I think they were motivated because of Haggai's words. But Zerubbabel, of course, and Joshua were leaders. And I'm sure that Haggai, as far as being a prophet was concerned, didn't speak to all the people. He probably spoke to a small group of people like Zerubbabel and Joshua, because they were the leaders. So
it mentions the remnant. So Zerubbabel, Joshua, Haggai, and the remnant all just...
With all the remnant.
Yeah, got excited and said, okay, let's do this.
And when they speak about the remnant, that is what was left over from the days of Babylon.
Yes.
They had, most
of them. But they were loyal people to God, because that's why they were able to survive.
Yeah, they were faithful people, and God said, some of you will survive. And some of them did, and these were the ones that were exiled, but they were faithful. And so God spared their lives.
When, first Darius and then Cyrus, they gave the people permission, whoever wanted to go back.
That's right.
Those were the faithful ones that wanted to see their country back and their temple back again.
Yeah.
There were others that just stayed in Babylon when they were comfortable where they were at.
Yeah, and there were 70 years have passed, and so I doubt that, well, there were probably a few people left over who had survived and lived during the exile, the initial exile. But that was 70 years before. So anybody who came back who were original exilees, they were pretty elderly people. But their families, their offspring, that remained faithful. And they had the opportunity of going back to Jerusalem, and they took it. Most of them were absorbed into the Babylonian culture. Daniel never left there. Jeremiah, as far as we know, never left there. They were part of the royal family of Judah, they never left Babylon once they were exiled.
So. I don't remember at the moment if both Darius and Cyrus did it, but at least one of them subsidized the people in their work,
Cyrus,
and supported them.
I think that was Darius, yeah. Cyrus might have too, I've forgotten. I know Cyrus is in there, and one of them was motivated. I think it was Darius that was motivated because someone found the Old Testament parchments, and in it, one of them was, it was foretold, I think it was Cyrus, and it was foretold him by name, centuries before he even existed, that he was going to do something good. And when somebody found the Old Testament parchments and read them in front of him, that got his attention. But I think they had limited success with Cyrus because they ran into, they got there and they ran into some real difficulty with some of the locals there that had moved in.
That was where those people you're talking about, they made him stop work on the
That's
center.
Right.
And then, I don't remember if it was them, I think they asked, no, it was before. They had Darius take a look at, but they had been troublesome before and rebellious. And so things shot. But then I think the Israelites turned to Cyrus and says, look in the law that Darius did this for us. He gave us this permission. And he told those bad guys, shut up and subsidize their work.
Yeah.
So he was both Darius and Cyrus were good guys, at least part of it.
Okay, well, so anyway, people did listen to Haggai, didn't they?
Yes.
And did what he said. They were motivated and they started building the temple.
Well, he also made them look at the former Solomon's in 2:3, look at the former glory of the temple back then.
Well, Haggai got on to him. That's true. We'll mention that in just a second.
Mention it now.
It must have been pretty old.
Chapter.
She's ready.
Don't get ahead of me. So now in chapter 2, verses 1 through 9, it calls a prophetic promise of the future kingdom. What kingdom is he talking about? This is 1 month later after he got on to him about building their fancy houses and the walls of Jerusalem instead of building the temple. And so 1 month later, and Haggai is telling him what? He said, this is not impressive. Whatever you're doing here is not impressive. So what does he compare it with? Compares it with the glory of Solomon's temple, didn't he? And reminds them how glorious that temple was. That was 500 years in the past. And he's reminding them of how glorious. They knew that. They weren't ignorant people. They had the scripture, the Old Testament, to rely on. And so this, of course, made the morale pretty low and kind of depressing when they were trying to finish the project. But Haggai reminds the people of the great prophetic promises of the future kingdom. And he mentions the prophecies from Isaiah and Micah. And this gives the people hope despite their circumstances. Chapter 2 went 1 through 9, but let's go 1 through 19, calls Israel to faithfulness and obedience. And following up, this is 2 months later now, Haggai gives a call for the faithfulness towards the covenant and refers to the book of Leviticus in his conversations with some priests about the purity of their rituals. And Haggai mentions touching a dead body. What does that do?
Unclean.
Makes a person unclean if they touch a dead body. Yeah. So when they're rebuilding the temple, they haven't humbled themselves. They haven't really tried to keep God's covenant. And so he says, everything you've touched is unclean. You're building an unclean building here.
Well, I thought verse 12, if a man carries holy meat in the fold of his garment and touches bread with the fold, or cooked food, or wine, or oil, or any other food, will it become holy?
Yeah.
And friends, no, it's the other way around.
That's right.
The holy becomes unholy.
Unholy, that's right. And that's what's happening to the temple because of their attitudes. So Haggai is telling them that only by true repentance and true faithfulness to the covenant that their building efforts will result in God bringing on his blessings to them. So in one sense, their future is in their hands. And God is just waiting for them to be faithful. And this choice that Haggai puts before the people is like the challenge Moses gave before the people entered the promised land. We find that in Deuteronomy chapter 30. And this obedience will lead to blessings and success. And faithlessness will lead to ruin. Then we come to number 4. And that's chapter 2, verses 20 to 23. And that points towards the future kingdom. And this book concludes with Haggai's summary of the future hope in God's kingdom. The choices of a bright future if their generation, Haggai's generation, will be faithful to God and realize the promises. Will Zerubbabel be faithful and turn out to be the messianic king?
No.
He won't?
Nobody's in the line for it, so I mean, he's got to.
Well, guess what? In order to find out, we're going to have to study the last two books. Zechariah and Malachi. And that'll give us the answer to that question.
What was the question?
So anyway, fun little book to look at and see the predicament that they were in, what they had plans, and how their plans turned out. And, you know, of course, the country of Judah is long gone. It's been gone for 70 years and is not going to be resurrected. But who comes in, by the way, after the Persian Empire?
The Greeks.
The Greeks?
Romans. Wasn't it?
Alexander the Great, that's right. The Greeks come in, and then after that's after Malachi, and after that we have a few years of silence. We have a lot of secular history. I would love to study that sometime. The time between the ending of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New. Fascinating to me. And has a lot to do with the New Testament and the beginning of that period of time.
Are you volunteering?
Has. probably not.
I knew the answer when I asked.
But, yeah, great period of history, about 350 years. But there were some important things that happened during that period of time that impacted the New Testament and the history of what we find in the New Testament. The beginning of that took place during that period of time. And kind of interesting that God was silent for all those years. But fascinating study. Sometime we'll have to do that. But that's about it. Anybody got any questions or?
How are you going to divide up Zephaniah? I mean,
Zechariah.
Zechariah?
Yeah.
I don't know yet. There's quite a few chapters in.
14.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I don't know how, I haven't looked at it too thoroughly to see how long the chapters are. But just, we'll do an overview first. So kind of, you know, you can go through and hit the highlights. And we'll just kind of touch base on those first of all. And then we'll pick a chapter or two that we can study and get into more detail. Yeah, go.
Marcus?
Well, I'm going to get the head. But in the end of Haggai here, then that day says Jehovah of hosts, I will take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, and make thee as a signet, because I've chosen thee. Now that's somewhere in the future, and I'm thinking that's the time of Christ, but it might be the end of the world. Now, Zerubbabel is in Jesus' earthly lineage. So is that referring to Jesus or Zerubbabel himself?
I don't know. There are references to Jesus and God's kingdom coming. But I really haven't looked at it too deeply to give you an answer. I don't know.
It's not like, you know, we don't have the impression really in the book of Zerubbabel being that hot an item himself.
Well, that's
God speaks of him.
Yeah, and that's the
much best, more highly.
Yeah, that's the question we have. Is he going to be the messianic answer or not? So we're going to find out in Zechariah and Malachi.
So you're sure of that already? Well, then we don't need to study that. We already know the end of the story.
You ruined it for us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's as bad as ripping the last page out of
and I've had that happen before. In fact, my children's Bible here, I'm missing about 6 pages out of 2 Thessalonians.
Oh, great.
It's really irritating. I haven't found another copy.
There's a copy on the back there.
Is there a copy back there?
Yeah, on the back. Second to the back seat.
You'll
exchange. I'll
exchange this one for that one. But I like it because it's just there's no these, thous, and thus.
It's the way you speak to it.
Thys and stuff like that.
It's the way you speak to it.
Simple for a simple-minded person.
You should make copies of that page.
I'm sorry?
You should make copies of the pages you're missing and put it in there and then swap it out.
She's right.
I don't think that far.
That's what we have to do with our school books.
We're old.
Oh, because you know.
Oh, the kids. I was really disappointed when I got through it. I think it was Lenny that had the class then. I went, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? I'm missing 7 pages. But anyway, so thanks, guys. Appreciate it.